Yes, 50 years after Neil Armstrong took that one small step, there is a new space race underway to return humans to the moon, as we've just heard. The US President Donald Trump wants American boots on the lunar surface by 2024, while China's aim is to have a scientific research station near the moon's south pole within 10 years. With the US-China rivalry extending into the cosmos, how much pressure is NASA under? On Breakfast yesterday, we spoke to Chris Culbert, the chief technologist at NASA's Johnson Space Center in Houston.
It's fair to say we're feeling some pressure. The agency is not what it was in the 60s. We are, you know, nobody is, right? That was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. We're far more risk adverse than we were back then. We've gone through some trying periods. The Challenger and Shuttle accident in Columbia both changed the way the agency looks at risk. We are more cautious, a little more conservative than we used to be. We also have to get the political process to buy into that discussion of risk in a meaningful way.
That's Chris Culbert from NASA's Johnson Space Center in Houston. Well, joining me on the line from Seattle is Casey Dreyer, a senior space policy advisor at the Planetary Society. It's a US nonprofit which promotes the exploration of space. Welcome to Breakfast.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
What's your judgment? Can NASA pull off returning astronauts to the moon within 5 years?
NASA could pull it off if it had the resources to do it, and they're probably not going to get the resources to do it, so I'm not optimistic right now.
I mean, we first went to the moon, and it was thrilling, frankly, to hear the report that we had just before I spoke to you in the 60s. Why has it taken so long to try to go back?
Well, it's just a function of what people are willing to pay for. Every single Apollo mission after Apollo 11 cost about $3 billion each if you adjust for inflation. NASA didn't have that kind of political support in the 70s. They put all their chips into the low Earth orbit basket by making the space shuttle. The space shuttle costs so much to operate and manage and run every year that they didn't really have anything left over to go back to the moon. And now that the space shuttle is retired, that money is kind of opened up again, and we're seriously considering it now for the first time in 40 years, really.
As I understand NASA's plans, it wants to set up a space station which would permanently orbit the moon and allow astronauts to spend months there, you know, performing experiments and so on, and allow them to descend to the moon at any time. Now, what would be achieved by this?
Well, probably the most important thing you can do with an orbiting station is practice living in space away from Earth's protective magnetic field for long times. So that gets you basically practicing for long duration trips to Mars. That's probably the most forward-looking aspect of having an orbiting space station. And then you also get another benefit of being able to kind of change your orbit around the moon, access different areas of the moon whenever you want to do it. So it gives you a little more flexibility in the long run.
I mean, it isn't as if the moon hasn't been getting any attention. The European Space Agency has landed a probe there, and earlier this year, a Chinese probe touched down on the far side of the moon, the first time any nation's been there. So is the US reviving all of these lunar ambitions, again, because of geopolitical rivalry?
I think that plays into it somewhat, particularly for the human spaceflight side. I mean, NASA already has a probe orbiting the moon, the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter. It's been there since 2006. I mean, don't forget, 15 years ago, George W. Bush said that NASA should return to the moon. Mm. And it was trying to do that for a few years. And then President Obama came into power and canceled that program.
Yes, that was called Constellation, wasn't it? And as I read in my research, it was billions of dollars over budget and years behind schedule, and it was unclear if it was going to be successful. So that sounds like very good governance by Obama to me.
Yeah, it was a pretty compelling reason to cancel it. It wasn't doing too well.
So, I mean, the follow-up to that is there any real evidence that NASA has become this leaner, more agile organization to, because that was the judgment at the time, that NASA was just not in a fit state to really do what was necessary to take the next step?
Yeah, well, I mean, really, we're thinking of it as NASA's being told to do an Apollo-style program with a minimal budget, you know, so it doesn't even have anything close to what Apollo had to work with. And so all the attitudes in terms of safety, size, and scope, you know, were set in the 1960s. But don't forget, after Kennedy announced Project Apollo, NASA's budget doubled, And then the next year, it doubled again. This year, President Trump has proposed a 5% increase to try to advance this lunar exploration plan. And so it's really nothing comparable. And so just it's easy, you know, rhetoric is cheap. It's really easy to say we're going to do something. But following through with the resources to do it, it's very difficult then, you know, to really come through and give NASA the resources it needs to succeed.
Well, might NASA join, with commercial partners to work on, say, I mean, they haven't even got a rocket ready to fly humans into deep space.
That's true. And I was just about to say, yeah, that is the X factor here. This is the new addition to this mix. Why will this potentially work this time and not before? Well, we have companies like SpaceX, companies like Blue Origin. We have this whole slew of smaller companies getting contracts to commercially deliver payloads, scientific payloads to the surface of the moon. That could lower costs. It could add additional opportunities there. But again, all of these companies won't work for free. They're going to be paid by NASA at the same time. And the fundamental physics of sending humans into space, you know, space is trying to kill you all the time. It is the least hospitable environment we know of. And that is not an easy problem to solve, whether or not you're a commercial company or a government entity.
So how reliant would you say then that this whole ambition by NASA and the government is on private companies and entrepreneurs like Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos, for instance, from Amazon, to provide the money, the technology, and the infrastructure for this mission? And of course, what will that mean if they do end up doing that? They're going to own space, are they?
Yeah, well, that's the interesting thing. The biggest difference now is that when NASA is working with these private companies, that the companies own their own intellectual property, right? So Elon Musk owns his capability to go into space. He can send whatever he wants into space now. It's his rocket, like he sent his Tesla up there a few years ago. And so NASA is going to be dependent on these types of public-private partnerships, basically coming up with solutions to particular service needs. So they're looking at a very critical component going forward, this lunar transfer vehicle going from the surface back up to this lunar space station. They're having private industry compete to provide that service. So you might have one or two of those being able to be, you know, and NASA would buy the service. Like, I would like to buy two tickets to the surface. And SpaceX or Blue Origin or another company would provide that to NASA and then own the capability to use with as they please.
Why even send humans to the moon, Casey, when, I mean, dare I say it, you could use robots and AI to do research, even mine the moon?
That's absolutely true. And really the best answer is you want an all of the above approach. You know, you can build robots to thrive in the vacuum of space. They don't need to breathe. They don't need to eat. You know, you have a variety of easier things you can send robots to do. Humans, you want to have these bigger picture motivations for sending humans into space. Ultimately, we need to get beyond the kind of the cradle of Earth. This is a very far forward looking idea. But even the idea of extending human presence, practicing at the moon, being able to develop the capability to operate in deep space. And again, to me, the most compelling reason to go to the moon is to start practicing for going to Mars. It's our nearest planetary neighbor. It has a small atmosphere. It provides the most likely opportunity for humans to thrive beyond Earth for any other destination in our solar system.
Oh, this is really tilting at windmills, dare I say, because I noticed that Mike Pence said if NASA is not currently capable of landing American astronauts on the moon in 5 years, we need to change the organization, not the mission. So I'm wondering whether we're really, you know, ready for a giant disruption of NASA. Is that what's coming next? Or is this all just rhetoric?
It's not just rhetoric, but I will be surprised if we see some significant changes because Congress has a say in this. And the way that NASA is set up, remember, in any democracy, when you choose to spend money, you know, it has to be spread around in a way that makes the representatives of the country happy. And so you have many members of Congress who are happy with the way NASA is structured now. It's spending money in their districts. It has jobs in their districts. Getting that through, getting a fundamental change of NASA through Congress at this, the way that Congress is set up now, is very, very difficult. And so it's kind of, inertia is very hard to break with any large government program. NASA's no exception.
I wonder if the fact that India and Russia are working on lunar missions might sort of, that might be just bragging rights too. Look, just before I let you go, one of our texters has come in and said, and you're the perfect person to ask, didn't only two of the astronauts land on the moon? Your reporter said all three names, then that they landed on the moon. And this texter, thinks that only Michael Collins stayed in orbit Did he just stay inside the capsule? Please clarify me for me, says Jimmy.
Oh, yes. Michael Collins stayed in the command module orbiting the moon while Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin walked on the surface. He was the pilot of the command module, and he stayed there.
Okay, so our listeners know far more than they need to, maybe, about the detail of the moon landing. Look, thank you very much indeed, Casey. Very interesting to talk.
Oh, happy to be here. Thank you.
Casey Dreyer is a senior space policy advisor at the Planetary Society, which is worth looking up and Googling as well.